Oof. There we go. That's better. I don't like being the whole screen. You know what I'm saying? Recording. All right. Check-in sheet. I don't care about that. What do I need here? Videos. JK Moto. Every episode. JK Moto podcast intro. Oh, you go away. Are we ready? Mic check. Test. Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. This episode is brought to you by JK Moto Entertainment, your one-stop shop for all your motorcycle track day and club racing questions and answers. Subscribe on YouTube, follow on Facebook and Instagram at JK Moto Entertainment. Besides YouTube, you can obviously find us wherever you're currently listening right now, be that Amazon Podcast, Google Podcast, YouTube Music, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcast. That's a big one. Got a lot of people on the Apple Podcast platform. Love having you guys over there. Go ahead and give us a follow on whatever platform you are currently listening on. And then go check out the YouTube channel if you haven't yet. If you're here on YouTube, this episode should be, I don't know, probably about an hour and a half maybe. So I understand completely if you don't want to stick around and have that just sitting on your screen taking up your time. So go check us out on the other platforms. There will be a link down in the description to our RSS feed so you can find whatever platform it is that you enjoy the podcast listening on. Now that we got that out of the way, it is time to get into the actual episode. Before we get into that, I am not just going to be sitting here talking about myself today, and we are in the middle of MotoGP. Now, I'll be upfront and honest with everyone. We are filming some of these ahead. So all of our episodes that are coming out with MotoGP race are pretty much on par with the race that happened that week. Everything else has been pre-recorded, so MotoGP hasn't actually started yet, so don't expect much talk about that in this episode. But I am going to bring on a special guest that is currently racing over in Europe, or at least had the opportunity to do so, but is from America. So we'll get him on here, talk to him, and see what the racing life is like on the other side of the pond. So let's go ahead and roll intro and bring on our guest. My first track day, I got the pictures back, and I was like, I'm never doing that again. Ground at 100 miles an hour. Welcome back. Hey, everybody, this is Steve. Steve, do you want to go ahead and give yourself an introduction of some sort? I know you're not super famous or anything, but at least I don't think so, maybe. I don't know you that well.
My name's Steve, and I have a YouTube channel called Footage Factory. I've ran it since 2009.
Okay.
And I also have another channel called Track Data, at Track Data, where I post to both. And all my best scenes I put on Footage Factory, but then I use Track Data to basically dump all my footage.
Okay. Awesome. Well, let's start with the basics. I usually like to get, you know, people's backgrounds, kind of how long you've been riding. I know you and I have talked just a little bit, so I know you do some track day stuff yourself, maybe some racing. Kind of walk us through a quick backstory of what got you started and where we're at.
So I started riding motorcycles while I was in the military in California, probably 2003.
Okay.
And they had a program at our base. A lot of guys were crashing, getting hurt, so I thought, hey, may as well jump on this program where they teach you how to ride. And then you take the slip to rider's training, take it to the DMV and
the MSF stuff.
Is that what it is? It's been such a long time ago. I don't even know what it takes to get a license.
Yeah. These days it's a Motorcycle Safety Foundation is who runs those courses. I think, I don't know what it would have been back then, but
so yeah, I started, I, uh, I got my license. I can't remember if I got my license and then the bike or the bike and then the license, but my first ever bike was the 2003 or 4 R6. It was the one that came out right after the carbureted one, not the newest one.
Mm-hmm.
And I started riding the canyons of Northern California, and I thought I was the best rider there ever was.
As we do. As we do. Okay, so 03, 04, R6, nice little 600cc super sport. Was there a reason you went sport bike right off the bat?
Because a girl I was seeing at the time thought that that was attractive, sexy, whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean? And I was you know what? And then I quickly learned that majority of girls, you know, 9 out of 10 girls, this was that 1 out of 10 girl that was like, yeah, that bikes are sexy. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get a bike and come to find out.
That's a secret. No one actually knows that the girls don't care. We try and keep that on the DL.
Yeah. That I learned pretty quick. And then, but I'm happy I did because I was mistaken in the sexy department, but it's just super fun, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Northern California, some canyon carving.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yep. How long were we doing that? Just kind of the classic.
Until, I got out of the military and then, I started working for a dealership there and I bought a Gixxer 1000. I think it was 2007. Yeah. Okay. I wrecked my bike. I 12 o'clocked it.
Oof. Okay.
So, and then I don't really remember why, but I thought, well, what a great time to upgrade to a Gixxer 1000.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing was fast. And it just reinforced that I thought I was the fastest rider. When me and my friends, we would hit the canyons. Some friends would pop wheelies on the freeway, and not me. I just loved the canyons, and I would just kick all their butts. But you know, if you ever like, I don't know if you've ever like got a set of boxing gloves with you and your friends, and if you're the best fighter out of all your friends, you think you're the best fighter in the world.
Doesn't mean you can necessarily go hang in the ring with
any
normally trained person at all.
No.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Not at all.
That is, you know, that's a, for the, I do feel bad sometimes for everyone that listens to this podcast. I feel like we all have the same backstory. All right. Like, yeah, hey, we got a bike. We were on the road. We were amazing, or at least we thought. And then at some point we all find the track and realize that there is an entire separate world out there. But when was that for you? Go ahead.
When I went to the track, well, actually before I answer that, what do you ride?
Ooh, here we go. I'm currently riding a 2019 RSV4.
Okay.
Aprilia.
Okay.
I also still have my 08 Gixxer 750 in the garage. I do love that thing. So.
And the reason, because I watched a previous video, and you used to live in Washington.
That is correct. Yep.
And right now, currently, I'm in Scotland. Right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm relocating back to my house, which is just north of Portland.
Okay.
And so what was your question? Was my first ever track day?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess just kind of the background there. What got you there? Where was it? And when in the timeline was it?
So I think it was 2020. And my wife, I convinced her, because we moved here to Scotland, and I convinced her that I needed a motorcycle to ride on the road because the roads are so much narrower. I think she just kind of just like, whatever, get a motorcycle. I don't care. Or just get something that's not like crazy. And I go, okay. So then I got a Monster, Ducati Monster 1000, the air-cooled bike, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And behind her back, I went to the track day. I just went and I was like, oh, I got to do this. And I was recording and my wife goes, this doesn't look that bad. Right. Uh-huh. And then, so I went out there and she came out, I think she came out the first time and she goes, you are slow.
Oof.
And, I was slow.
I mean, yeah, you know, we tend to be that way, but to have the wife come out and say it, man, that's rough.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad. Well, okay. What? And I haven't gone far enough back on your. When was your first ever track day year wise?
I want to say 2019.
Okay. I think. Yeah, I did my first ever. My wife did not say I was slow, but I would tell you I was definitely slow. Yeah. So for perspective, I was at the Ridge. If anyone's ridden up there, which it sounds like maybe you'll be headed up there soon. I did like a 240 something was my fastest lap on my first day, which is not, I'm not trying to brag about that at all. It was, it was slow. Yep.
Is that slow? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. For perspective there too, I think when I left the Ridge, I was finally able to get under 2 minutes, which is still not fast. Moto America, the big boys at the Ridge are running like mid 130s. So, and I can't tell you, I never ended up going and watching any WIMRA, the local road racing association out there. I never watched any of their races. But I want to say those guys are probably cooking in at least the low 150s, if not well into the 140s. And that is just if anyone out there is like, oh, come on, man, I'm way better than that. I don't know. Let us know down in the comments, what kind of lap times you have. But yeah, a 240 is not good at all.
And that's another thing too. In my track data, YouTube channel, I have all of, like, I'd like to get all of my fastest times to all the tracks that I've been on, because all my times out here in Europe versus all your times, they just, who knows?
Yeah.
But soon enough, I'll be at the Ridge. My local track is Knock Hill. Have you ever heard of Knock Hill?
Ooh, you know, I think I've seen the name come across on some Facebook page at some point, but
you'll,
I'm not familiar
with it.
You'll
probably see it now. You'll be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's about 30 miles away. Yeah.
So 30 miles from you. Let's see, Knock Hill Racing Circuit. I'm just looking it up real quick because I always like seeing new tracks. That's what's kind of sweet about having you is, I've never met anyone or been able to talk to anyone that has raced across the pond. So what is that like? Just kind of, what's the scene like out there?
So what had happened is, just to make a long story out of it to keep the viewers entertained. Mm-hmm. My wife said, you're slow. And she goes, you got to get a faster bike. So, I always wanted to get an old CBR 1000, 2006 era, right? The okay. Repsol, older original Repsols. And I got that, and I was faster, but I still wasn't fast. And I think I did that for 2021 or 22. I can't remember. And then I think at the beginning of 22, that's what it was. I said, I'm going to get me an R1.
Okay.
And not only am I going to give me an R1. And I know once I get this R1, I'm going to be fast. And because the bike's so fast, I can't not be fast. I have to be fast, right?
It is how that works.
And I'm going to prepare the bike to race. And everything's going to be good. And at the season, so I bought this bike, and the bike had a crap load of problems.
Okay. It was, what year was it?
The current generation, to the 2016.
Okay. All right. Tracking.
And it had problems. There was brake fade. And the season opener was coming just for the track days, and I wanted to get like up and racing.
So right.
What do I do for the Scottish series? And but I didn't have a bike, so my wife, I don't know how I talked her into this. She's like, get whatever you want. So I walked into the Ducati dealership and I bought a V4S right off the showroom floor.
Wow! To the track specifically.
It's never been on the road.
Okay.
And if you guys go to Footage Factory, Actually, that bike ended up becoming my plan B bike, where I was trying to fix up the R1, and the R1, I was just kind of in tandem going back and forth. In fact, I went to Spain and I bought both those bikes. And I remember the guys out there were like, what the hell is this? This guy's bringing a Ducati and an R1. And I can never quite get my bike prepared to race. But what I did in the meantime, because I could do it in the wintertime, is I started racing pit bikes.
Okay.
So I might have misled you, and I apologize, but hey, we're here now.
That's fine.
The trophy's back there. I can grab it. I got third place in the pit bike series for the local area, where a lot of the BSB guys will train in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I got third place isn't because I'm a good rider, but because nobody was racing in that series. Except for a few other guys. Well, actually, no, I take it back. A few guys were racing, but I went to every single race. So I got enough points that it put me in third place, where a lot of the fast guys would go once or twice and they just didn't have the points.
Yeah. Okay. So when you were, just to dig into the pit bike thing real quick, we talking like Ovalis? We talking what are we looking at?
So I mean, they probably have the same bike out there, but it was called a Fun Bike M2R, which is a Chinese old Cowie 160, right?
Okay. Yep.
And that's what I raced. I just completely decked it out. I upgraded the carb and exhaust and as much as I could, and I just beat that bike up. And then I did that in the off season, but then I realized, you know, I don't know if I want to race. Number one, these guys are so fast.
Mm-hmm.
The faster I got, I could hang with them a little bit longer, but I was like, I'm getting good, but I'm not, I'm still a lot of track days away from being able to hang with these guys 100%. And right. I just got to a point where I'm like, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to hang with these guys, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've asked myself, I'm nowhere near hanging at the moment, but I've asked myself plenty of times before. I'm like, you know, what does the future look like? When does it stop? When do you actually hit the point where you're like, okay, I'm good? Cause it's been said before, you know, plenty of friends on the podcast that I've had and friends just in general that I've talked to, they're like, there will always be someone to race. And it goes both directions. You know, even if you're the slowest guy out there, there's someone to race. So
anyway. So what do you bring, the Aprilia? Is that your main bike on track?
Right now. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I guess a little backstory on that. I don't know if I've ever told that on the podcast, but I had the Gixxer, right? And I went and did a track day on it. And I was like, yeah, that was kind of fun. I got the pictures back. My knee was never anywhere near the ground. I thought I was way better than that. But it was like, I'm talking like a foot and a half of distance between my knee and the ground still. And so I saw that and I was just kind of like, okay, maybe it's not for me. So it wasn't until about a year later. I was out on the street. I was actually just driving to work, open freeway. It was a Saturday morning, you know, hit the on ramp and found first and second and third and fourth and about the rev limiter on each of them. And then finally I was like, all right, that's fine. You know, that's good. And so I slowed down and there happened to be a white SUV behind me. and then that white SUV turned on some red and blue lights. And
what state?
It was in Washington.
Yeah.
So, he pulled me over, you know, had a good talk with him. He let me off, but he gave me a stern talking to and essentially told me, he's like, what are you doing? I was like, look, dude, I don't know. I don't have an excuse for you. I mean, what I wanted to say was like, trust me, go ride it yourself right now and tell me you want to do the same thing. But anyway, we didn't do that. So I came home that day and I told the wife, I was like, I think we need to do more track days.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I think it's about time. Usually if I'm out on the street, it's so hard not to just crack it. Usually I'm pretty good. I've got some pretty good self-control, but you get a big bike like that and it just, whatever. So anyway, flash forward from there. I did about six track days that year, from the first time I taped up the lights, it never came back off. Right. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the year, I was just like, well, I obviously am not going to ride this on the street anymore because it's summer and I didn't touch it at all. So I went ahead and did put some race fairings on it. There were a bunch of other, like those fairings were beat up anyway. I needed new ones. So I was like, we might as well just convert this to a track/race bike. So I did that conversion. And the following spring, I hadn't ridden all winter, obviously. And when you're not doing track days, you get real, you know, kind of down and you want to ride. And so I wanted to ride. And so instead of going and doing a track day in the spring, I just went and bought another bike. That was an 01 Harley Sportster. Cause I was like, okay.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I was like, I'll get something chill, something calm. And you know, I got that to 100 miles an hour once. I think it took about 17 minutes, but it got up there and that was enough for me to be like, all right, perfect. I can't even actually get in trouble on this thing. It's not possible. It won't do it. And I rode that for a while, probably about a year and a half. Was still doing track days. What time frame was this? That was in 2021
ish. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, about a year and a half of riding that and then still doing track days on the Gixxer. And that was a great time. Me and the former co-host on the show, Cole, we were traveling. We went to California, did some track days down south, up north, in Washington, went to PRR in Oregon, went to Utah. I even think, we did one track day at Arizona Motorsports Park down in Phoenix. So we were kind of going all over. That was in December, actually.
Oh, so it was halfway decent weather, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was nice. It was pretty nice. So, yeah, and then I'd be out driving on the freeway, and, you know, a sport bike blows by, and you see him just keep going, and I was getting that itch. And, of course, me being me, you know, I run a motorcycle YouTube channel and podcast, so I'm always on the internet looking at bikes and whatnot, and so I was looking at all the super bikes at the time, and the Aprilia really stood out to me. And then I think it was in August of that year, I had enough money and I found one down in, actually I was in Portland at a Ducati dealer down there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
Yep. So, actually that Ducati dealer is quite famous downtown. Here in the US.
Downtown. Yeah. There's a cop in Ridgefield, the town where my house is at, and he used to work at that Moto Corsa, is that what it's called?
Yep.
And he was going to take me in there because I'm actually shipping my Ducati over there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, sweet. Yeah, I think Hannah is her name, and she's still working there.
Oh, really?
She was the sales lady that worked with me, and then also found out later she does quite a bit of racing herself. She's in the Hooligan series in Moto America. So yeah, if you get a chance to chat with Hannah, definitely do it.
I will.
And then I know Josh Heron frequents that dealer specifically quite a bit. So yeah.
So I never told, I didn't get it. You reminded me when you were on your bike and you got pulled over by the police. You reminded me. And can you hear me? Is the audio still good?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So my first ever track day, I'd like to, even if we have to do a second podcast, I'm totally okay with that. I'd like to understand the structure of a track day in the States, because the track day that I went to was an open track day. It was no sessions, just nonstop, unless it's a yellow flag, red flag, you know, like just nonstop.
Yeah.
And is that the same out there?
So actually, when I went to AMP, Arizona Motorsports Park, that is the only open track day I have done.
Okay.
And that was that format where, you show up and it was open.
Well, the problem with that here is that literally, so I don't know if you know Rory Skinner, if you've ever heard him, he lives, raced in BSB and Moto 2. He lives in the same town here. Right. And, anyways, guys like him were on track. And I'm brand spanking new, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're flying by me. And so anyways, when I came on, and they said specifically in the first email, they said, you have to have experience with track days. And they said, have you ever been to a track day before? And I go, oh yeah, California. Oh yeah. Lying. Completely lying, right? Yeah. Like, so I get out there and I'm like, what the F word? Like, oh. I think I might have passed one person that day.
Okay.
And then anyways, every time I was on the way home, I'd call my wife every, so literally like I must have been there every weekend. I must have been 20 track days in 2021, right? Wow. Literally like every week.
Mm-hmm.
And my times for Knock Hill were like 110s, which are not good. And then when I finally got a sub one, I was like, here we go. Now the problem is once you get a sub one, you can only make incremental.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That first,
you've been there, obviously.
Yep.
But I would be calling my wife and I'm like, oh my God, I passed this person. I passed 5 people. I passed 10 people. Oh, I bumped up. And now by the end of 2023, probably I'm now in the fast group.
Okay.
I'm not getting better. And my times are like stuck at 57 seconds, that's okay. And then I had a friend, that one that I was doing the racing with, he says, hey, you know, if you want to get better, you probably should start doing other tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, what do you think about that? As far as getting better,
100%. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you can, that's, I feel like it's a decently known tip. It's hard when you're in a spot where you are like, you know, being half hour away from a track, like, yeah, it's very easy. You just go to that one. And that was similar when I was at the Ridge. It was 45 minutes to an hour away. And so I just went to the Ridge. My previous co-host, you know, lived in Utah. We're good friends and we'd head out. So he came out to visit, ended up doing the track day there with me. And he's like, all right, well, I got to keep doing this. So he did it down in Utah. So that was kind of what sparked that whole traveling thing. And he kind of also just sparked that in general. It was like, hey, I want to go see more. But yeah, there were definitely times. It's difficult for me right now because I actually haven't been to the same track in, I think, 2 years now.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So because I've just been kind of, you know, I'm on the East Coast in South Carolina now, and so I'm just kind of traveling all over, and I don't do as many as I would like to, but yeah, I haven't done the closest I got was I went back to Utah last year, which should be the same track, but I did the East course. So they split it up. They get East, West, and Perimeter. And technically,
so you went specifically back for the track day, or did you go there to see a friend?
And to visit family. That's where I'm originally from. Wow. So there was more to it, but I'm not going to travel across the country and not have a motorcycle with me.
For sure. Well, so that's funny. So right now I've got bikes scattered. I've got a bike here. I've got a bike in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife's actually in Spain right now too. My wife show jumps at an Olympic level.
Okay.
So we have an agreement. Whoever is higher up in the championship gets the priority. Whoever's doing better, and she's kicking my butt, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm flying to Spain this Sunday to help her out. But my friends this year in September are going to Portimao, and they're constantly like, let's go. But I want to do what you're doing, but in the States. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I had the ability to do all the track days in the world, I would. So basically, right, that's what I'm trying to do both in Europe and in the States, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's fun. It's tons of fun. And the most rewarding part about going to different tracks is once you finally come back to your home track, you will see your times come down 100%. And you, like, the first time I traveled down to California, a couple, you know, turns are set up just barely differently, or the braking zone is different because, or, you know, maybe you're coming in with way more speed and it kind of opens your eyes to like, well, these things can slow down fast. And so then you get back to your home track and you're like, okay, I can definitely push this zone, or I can pick up the gas in, or, you know, whatever it might be. And yeah, you 100% see a difference and kind of piecing together. It's weird for me now with the amount of different tracks I kind of have seen. One, talking to people, they're like, well, you know, have you ever been to blah? I'm like, yeah, once 3 years ago. What are we talking about? They're like, this turn, do you remember it? I'm like, yeah, trying to dig through the different roads in my head.
Yeah.
But you can, I can show up to almost any track and say, okay, this turn is a lot like turn, you know, 1752 at anyway, pick a random turn at a random different track. And you can kind of like piece together, you hit a point where you've seen almost every turn before. And so every track is just a conglomerate of all the other ones, essentially.
So there's a guy here, and a lot of the guys here in Scotland are going to see this, Scotland and in England are going to see this podcast. Hopefully, mm-hmm. hopefully I can get the double of the views. But so one of the racers out here, his name's Sam Monroe, and he was telling me, he said, this guy's fast. He races British Superbike. And when he's out there, he's always in the top 10. But the problem is, it's so expensive that, I mean, like, you have to have a rich family to do this. Mm-hmm. So I got to talking to him, and I was like, because I'm constantly picking their brains. In fact, I even put my aim on their bikes. And I'll have them go on track, and then I'll bring their aim back, and I'll compare it to mine, and I'll send it off.
stealing it, data, I see.
And they're like, oh, you know, on turn two, he's actually leaning harder than you. And I'm like, really? You know what I mean? So, but he got to talking, and oh my God, I could talk to you about this five podcasts down. But he was saying that the competition out here in the UK is, you know, it's like soccer, you know, it's like probably that much better. But he says getting what's the word I'm looking for? Actually getting paid for racing out in America, you get paid more money. And I go, is that true?
Interesting. Okay.
And he goes, oh yeah. He says he has a buddy that's out here in Florida, and he goes, he's getting paid this much money, and compared to me, we're actually losing money. And I go, and he goes, I'm better than him. And I go, really? So then I got to talking. I was like, how long would it take you to go out to a track and learn it? He says, it'd take me 12 laps.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. What? There's a video I've got of him, and I'm on my Ducati, and I mean, 200 horsepower. And this guy passes me on a, I forget what bike it was. It was like 400 CCs, right? Whatever race series, cup series.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he passed me in such a way that was so close that it almost offended me. But now I realize that those guys with smaller bikes, that's the only way they can pass.
Right. Yep.
You know what I mean?
That corner speed, carrying the corner speed. Yeah. Yep. Man, that's, you know, the money part is interesting. I try not to dive into money too much on the show because you get caught up in how much it actually runs everything very quickly once you start kind of digging into it. But
until you tell me that's a rule, actually, I did a track day. My wife bought me a track day. I was out traveling. I said, hey, can you give me this track day at Knock Hill? She goes, okay, yeah, whatever. And I didn't realize it was a British superbike. Like all the riders were coming out and coaching everybody.
Okay.
And I go to Knock Hill so much that like, I'm just walking through the door and they don't do siding laps. But okay. With the school, James Whittam was there. I'm not sure if you know who that is, but he, just a rider from back in the day. They force you to do siding laps, but I didn't really know this. So, and I never do the siding laps. I let people just go out there and crash and whatever. And then I, you know, by the time they're all done, I go out there. I'm like, okay, hey, it's my turn. Right.
Right.
Anyway, so I'm getting my bike ready and they're all going out on track. And this guy comes up to me and says, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm checking the PSI of my tires. And he's like, you need to get your butt on track. I'm like, I don't know who you think you are, but I'm not going nowhere.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm Dan Linfoot. And Dan Linfoot's sponsored by Suzuki. It was Yamaha at the time. He's like a top level BSB guy. And I'm like, anyways, I got a little bit of trouble, but I ended up making decent friends with the guy because we started talking about sponsors and Kyle Ride and all the guys were there. They were just fascinated. And I was fascinated with them too, because if they like a certain product, they can't use that product because they're sponsored by another brand of helmet. They like this brand of helmet, but I'm sponsored by this brand. And then we started talking just about like sponsorships, you know, Amazon affiliates. And here they're teaching me how to ride bikes, and here I'm showing them how to get affiliates. And it was like everyone was just – so because of that, they all went out on track with me and rode with me. It was a great video, just them popping wheelies behind me. Super fast, but yeah.
Heck yeah. Interesting. That's kind of it just I guess you brought up the guy racing in Florida making more money than a guy racing BSB. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go then. Anyone that complains in the US about not making enough money racing, there you go. You know, that brought up a good question in my head though, and this is a little bit off topic, headed down a different path. So, you know, if you're not ready to head there, let me know. But a question I've always had, and I've never been to Europe, but basically dives into why we don't have any Americans in the top level racing. And the story goes that, well, in Europe, kids start racing at, you know, 4 or 5 years old. Do you know anything about that? Do you have any experience with that? Is that true? Just kind of what does that scene look like out there?
So, and I don't think I have a video about it, but there's I went to Cartagena in Spain last year, February, right?
Okay.
And I brought the R1 and the Ducati, and there was this kid that was out there. I think he was around 16. Mm-hmm. And he had the Aprilia 660, but it was I think that's what he had, right? But it was all like raced out and whatever. So I started talking to his mom and I said, I forget how I got on topic, but I said, what's going, like, why do I not, that's what it was. Why do I not see you guys at my track days? Cause I know all the guys at the track days now, literally, right. Like I'll go down to Donington up and down. Cause I'm just up and down the, and it's weird. You know, I'll see people throughout the entire country. Right.
Right.
It's like the bar scene back when you were younger, you used to like go to different bars and you know people from the different bars. Now it's just like that with track days.
Yeah.
But I've never seen these kids that are 16 and they all right. seem to know each other and they're all, and they all kind of know the Scottish people. So the mom was saying that in the UK, they have, the age limit is 18, unless you're racing and then you can do the practice days, but you can't do track days. So what we do is we get them down to Spain where literally you can smoke cigarettes at 14. You know, I'm not sure that's the truth, but it kind of is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got less restrictions on it.
And it kind of blew my mind because I'm like, wait a second. So there's age limits in the UK? And you go, yep. And he's turning 17 soon, so we have to wait another year. And then he'll be at track days with you all year long. And I go, oh. And then so one of my buddies that I was putting cameras on his bike, he went out there and he's like, you're not going to believe who's out here. And I'm like, who? It was some Moto 2 rider who was like some Indian guy, but he lived in Australia. And he was young.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on a R6 and he was kicking everybody's butt. And I was coming back looking at the footage. I'm like, wow, this guy's fast. Mm-hmm, and right. And it's weird in Spain. Spain, like no rules, just
like. So maybe, I guess maybe that's the secret then, is the fact that, because out here in the U.S., my theory has always been that no one cares. The sport in general is relatively small. Right. When you look at it. Yeah. And I always wondered, because there's, you know, you got little league football and T-ball and little league soccer and basketball. Anyway, all the sports you play all the way through high school. And so people invest money in that. And I think every kid at some point goes through the, well, I'm going to be a pro something. But no one really grows up thinking I'm going to be a pro motorcycle racer. And I've always wondered why in Spain they do think that and where the difference is. But I guess Maybe the restrictions is part of it. Maybe that's at least part of it for Europe.
So these guys out here in the UK, the only reason they aren't the best riders in the world compared to the Spanish guys is only because of the weather. Because these guys are nuts. Like they would be out here every day if they could. Okay. And I think you're right. Like how many people, my friends, their kids are playing American football, baseball, T-ball, whatever. And I mean, how many guys are growing up with whatever series to get them up to NASCAR.
Mm-hmm.
But how many Americans do you know that I've never met one? By the time I got into bikes, I was in my 20s and it's too late.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now I'm racing and I'm, you know, let me take it back. I'm out on track days and I'm competitive. And, but I mean, I'm 40 something years old, so, I'm never going to be able to go to MotoGP, you know?
Yeah, no, it's weird. It's something I've asked a lot of questions about. We do have, you know, people are starting to train a couple more kids. I know Aaron Stevenson at Cornerspin has been working a lot with Nathan Galker, and I believe Nathan Galker just went over to Spain. I think this year actually, and don't quote me on that. But there's a couple other youth programs. I think a big problem with it is that. It is so, I mean, the U.S. is huge, you know, and so like as a country, it's difficult to have a youth racing series for the country. You would have to get enough people, because there's not enough people in a local area, but then you're asking all these people to drive their kids and their bikes and all of that all the way across the country all year long.
For sure.
So yeah, I've always kind of considered or thought that's one of the big issues. But
so that pit bike, it's actually sitting right next to my garage right now, and I'm supposed to go down to Newcastle and I'm selling it to my buddy. I'm selling them to him for 200 pounds, right? Mm-hmm. Because number one, this guy, Ben, if you're watching, oh, did I lose you?
for a second. We're good.
Ben, if you're watching, man, I appreciate you, but he's buying it for his son, and I think his son's, you know, almost to his teens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Okay. I have a question for you.
Hit me with it.
You,
what do you got?
You touched on it. Obviously, you're thinking about what the end of track days looks like for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have another question about, like, you know, what series you follow. Obviously, you follow MotoGP. I wanted to see if you followed World Superbike, BSB or whatnot. But what is the progression of your motorcycling look like?
Ooh, like from here on out, the future? That's a good question. Yep. I'm just kidding. You know, I am ever getting older, and I don't want to quit riding. So I had a goal way back in the day to see the U.S. via racetrack. So to travel all over wherever I can and see all the different racetracks. And I think in my head, you know, at least one in every state that has one would be like, we've completed that. I don't have a date, like a year age that I care about hitting that by. It's just as it comes. And I've done pretty good. I've been to quite a few different states for track days. It's been a lot of fun. It's been awesome. I am supposed to be racing this year. I won't be doing a full, yeah.
Where?
It'll be down here. I'll be racing with Moto Gladiator.
What's the date?
The first one that I am looking at doing possibly is in April. And I haven't even... I've got a very, very busy schedule outside of racing motorcycles. So
do you? Well, yeah. let me change the subject for a second, but I do want to come back to that because that right here, Max Rist, he just did a, you might have seen the video where he wrecked his brand new before on a track day. Mm-hmm. And then he got to saying something really interesting. He says that there was a track day, was a Button Willow, I can't remember, where they had influencers on.
Interesting.
And I was like, you know what? I'm not that quite that level, but I'm pretty sure after this podcast, I'm going to be internet famous, right? So I would like, I would love to do an like, you know, Logan Paul, you know, here I am talking smack right now, trying to get you to box me, you know, but mm-hmm. instead it's the motorcycle world. So I'm just talking smack saying I'm faster than you, right? So how cool would that be to have an influencer race?
That would be interesting. That'd be, that would be wild. Yeah.
So April, that's your first one, huh?
Yeah. The first weekend, is April 13th, 14th. That'll be a VIR up in Virginia. Okay. I'm hoping to make that one. I don't have any guarantees on that, but we're hoping for it. So
I'm actually going to a Cletus driver experience next month.
Okay.
Cletus McFarland.
Mm-hmm.
I really would love to get out to the East Coast just to see how the track days are done. But not only that, actually, maybe towards the end of this year, I'd actually like to have, you know, to do a few track days.
Yeah.
So I definitely would like for your opinion to tell me, you know, what track days to go to. Yeah, that's what I want to do.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I can throw some opinions out here. You can also, you know, and anyone in the audience, feel free to message me. I'll share whatever opinions, but yeah, it's hoping to do some races this year. I'm not going to do a full season, but we'll get some racing in. Man, as far as the future, I don't know, wherever it takes us. Just kind of, I was trying to hold off on racing because the average lifespan of a club racer is about 3 to 5 years. And not lifespan like death, but lifespan of staying in club racing. Generally, people run out of money or get bored or have families or, you know, whatever comes up. And so I didn't want to jump into it prior to having all my ducks in a row and just get kicked right back out and
chewed up, spit out
and everything else. So I've been trying to kind of take it nice and slow. I enjoy the track day thing. Usually from what I've heard and then a little bit of what I've experienced, I did do a little bit of racing last year, nothing crazy, but I was in a couple races. As soon as a checkered flag comes out, you tend to like start dropping time, which I'm sure you kind of have some experience with, but Yeah, I wasn't quite ready to jump into that super quick. So we'll see. I'll do a couple of races this year, and then next year, maybe a few more. Just kind of try and do some races, do some track days, still trying to travel and see different tracks. So
for sure. Would you do any tracks out here in Europe? I mean, you probably would, but
yes.
would you ever realistically consider it?
You know, it's something I've thought of quite a bit. And I think it's like, that is on the bucket list to go do one. The issue is the big issue I have is like the cost versus, you know, the worth. And so how much am I going to spend? Is it actually worth it just to be like, oh, cool, I went and rode in Europe. However, you know, if we ever travel to Europe, there's no way I'm not going to a track day and renting a bike.
For sure.
And then the question of like, just like out here, if you ride Coda or Laguna Seca, I think Laguna Seca kind of feeds to both, but most local club racers do not like Coda. But everyone wants to ride Coda because it's on the MotoGP calendar. It's on the F1 calendar, right? Like it's Coda. It's Circuit of the Americas.
Sure.
That's where everyone wants to be. And so like in my head, the only tracks that I know out in Europe are the ones that MotoGP and World Superbike go to. So that's where I want to ride. But then I think about it and I'm like, well, how many cool kind of hidden in the meadow tracks are there out there that you have to know the locals that are actually way better?
So actually, if anyone digs deep into my Cadwell videos, I have Peter Hickman passed me in the fast group. So I was happy about that. And then Guy Martin was out there in the pits with us.
Wow.
He forgot his generator, so he borrowed ours.
There you go.
And because he borrowed ours, I tried to rope him into FaceTiming my wife because my wife loves him, and it didn't work. And my friends were just laughing their ass off, right? But but actually 100%, because driving out here in Europe is a different animal, especially here in the UK where it's on the other side of the road. Mm-hmm. But in getting to Cadwell, my buddy that lives in Newcastle, he's got a big motorhome, and I have him run as a fullback interference, just driving down the road while I follow him, because I got a horse trailer where I got I'm using my wife's horse trailer, and I got all my bikes packed into it, and it's just as the cars are passing me, oh, it's unreal.
Right.
And kind of to your point, you almost need to know the locals just to get in the first place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's like I said, it's on the bucket list. What it'll end up looking like, I don't know. Because the other thing too is that renting a bike at a track day, I think would be fun, but I'm always going to want to ride my own bike.
Yeah.
So yeah. I've ridden other people's bikes before. It's fine. It's fun. It's cool. Whatever. But
it's not.
It's not home. You know.
You know what I? This is what I hope this podcast keeps growing. Like, because your professionalism is just spot on. Your videos. As I was watching, I was like, this guy. One of the reasons I do YouTube is in the hopes that one day that so people are interested enough to let that thing fuel itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, all the guys who do photography, and next thing you know, they're doing photography for Formula One. How cool would it be? You're doing podcasts, and then, you know, 5 years down the road. Now, do you ever watch that YouTube channel 44 Teeth?
I do. Yep.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
I mean, they're out there with all the Scottish guys in Spain and stuff. I'm like, oh, I know that guy. But what a life they're living. They're basically using the thing they love to finance the thing they love, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's all this started way back in the day. I would bore people with how much I talk about motorcycles, right? Because that's all I care about. I would just bore people with it. You know, I work with, you know, 20, 30, maybe 40 people that I interface in a day. And so I can only ask them so many times, like, hey, do you have a motorcycle? Hey, are you going to come to the track with me? And the number of them that have a motorcycle is like less than 10%. And then the number of those that want to do track days is also less than 10%.
It's the opposite for me. I interact with majority motorcycle people. So I...
That's crazy. That's wild.
If I call my buddy Joe up right now, he literally, that's all he wants to talk about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're living in a good spot. So anyway, I sat down and I was like, well, how can I how can I fix both problems? And I said, well, hey, let's try a podcast on a YouTube channel. Let's try it out. Let's see. And let me do my part, because I think one of my first YouTube videos that I did, motorcycle related, I had my RSV4 and I wanted exhaust for it. And I found the company RaceFit, actually from England. And I was like, well, that looks kind of cool. That's cheaper. Let me see if I can find a video on it. And there was no video on it anywhere. Like my bike specifically, with that exhaust specifically, there was not a video. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll just order it anyway. Ordered it, got it, sounded great. I was like, well, let me make a video on it since there isn't one out there. And that did, it did decently enough. And so I just kind of, you know, I realized, I was like, well, how much information is there really on track days, and how much can I put out? How can I help flood the internet and get more people aware, help spread the awareness, answer all the little kind of questions, put out more and more info for all the newbies. And then my big goal has been to, like, I don't know everything. I'm not certified in much of anything. And so I don't try and come out and be like, this is how you must do it. But I've gotten, you know, tried to open up all the videos to comments and say, hey, please put your experience, call me out on things that are wrong. Let's build this up, because if I can get everyone that is doing it involved, that'll help spread the videos, which will help raise awareness and get more people to the sport, because I just don't want to see it die off. So
you talking right now, you want to know what I think a great topic, if you ever do invite me back to another podcast, is real quick. Later on down the road, I'd love to ask you about licensing, race license, but back to what I was going to say is recording. So in the States, you're allowed to have your helmet on your camera on your helmet, correct?
Sometimes.
Oh, really? So
most race orgs, yeah, most clubs do not allow helmet attached cameras.
Okay, so really, okay, because I see people on the track with like at the Ridge.
Yeah, so if you're just doing a track day, most of them will be okay. Yeah, it just has to be wired also. But as soon as you dip into a race, as soon as there's a flag involved.
So you're not allowed to have helmet cam out here in Europe, period.
Really, at all? Okay.
No, in fact, that's why I got this one, because I brought an integrated, I bought one from the States, an integrated, and they stopped me and they're like, what the hell is this? And Knock Hill, they let me out on track because it was DOT approved, but it was like Donington or Cadwell, they said, you got to take that off because they have a special license, a special sticker out here in the UK. Nowadays people will reach out to me and they'll say, hey, what do I do for the cameras, and what cameras do I get, and what programs? I actually think that's a great topic, because people that are listening to this, they're driving down the road. And I think I, just like how I got with you, a few pieces of advice for tires. Mm-hmm. I think a great topic would be cameras, you know?
That wouldn't be bad. I'll have to, you know, I'll put it in my list. That's not a bad idea. That's, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because that is actually such a, like, a big thing. One of my favorite coaches here in the U.S., Josh Bittinger, also has been a partner of the show in the past and still is. He, when he coaches, will take a camera. He's got a camera on his bike. And so he'll go follow you. And when you come back, the first thing you do is he goes straight over, plugs the camera into the computer. And he's like, okay, cool. Hey, at turn blah on this lap, you were doing this. Let me show you. And you get to see exactly what he's talking about. So whether or not you felt it, you know, you're in the moment, you're engaged, you're ready to go. You don't always feel what wild things your ankle's doing, you know, are your toes actually pointed the right way, or whatever it might be. And so to immediately have that, here's proof of what you just did. You're being dumb. Or, hey, this was really good. Look at how great you are at hitting this point. Make sure we stick to that, whatever it is. Having that video footage right there on the spot is huge. And that's one of the things that makes me sad, is I have an Insta360 camera. You get the sweet little extendy stick boy that goes off the back. And that is a wonderful way to get footage of yourself, because you can have it behind you and you can just see yourself. You can actually see what you're doing. I tried doing that at track day once. I actually got a full session done. And then I'm like, went out for the next session. Yeah. Went out for the next session. They're like, hey, you can't have that. I was like, oh, come on. But,
I hide so much stuff on the bike. I literally tape the Insta360 to the brake guard.
There you go.
And I'll do it on both sides. So you know how a clutch guard, nobody needs a clutch guard. I literally have both, and they're just taped to both sides. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do know, I won't name any names, but Insta360 does make a very small camera that's like tiny, and it fits so perfectly right in your helmet, right on that little shelf.
And my buddy got busted at Cadwell with it because they pop your visor open now. And it kind of blows my mind. That it's, oh, what if it breaks off and bounces around? And I'm like, yeah, there's people wearing glasses. You know, like,
yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's it is difficult. Maybe, you know, for all the crazy engineers that are, you know, driving your car on your way to your engineering job. There you go. If you want to quit your job and figure something out, create a race fairing that has built-in cameras.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
That'd be huge.
And I'm not sure how much time you have left, but you know what? I appreciate this podcast. I'd love to talk more tech with you because honestly, that's all I'm doing nowadays. Me and my buddies when we're in Spain is where, so my wife right now, she's in Spain and she's paying a company to be groom and travel with the horses and basically take care of the horses. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to the owner of the company and I said, you know, it's interesting that you guys are doing this for my wife, because when I'm out on track, not only am I the mechanic, I'm the rider. Well, my wife just focuses on riding, right?
Right.
Which I would love. I'd love to be Valentino Rossi and they just have the bike standing there. They're ready for me because then all I focus on is the bike. But I have to be a crew chief for my own race team. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. At the club level, that is, I guess, one of the most difficult parts. That is a tip for anyone out there racing or is thinking about racing. If you can find a friend that is racing a different class, so you together can be that crew chief for the other one, right? When you're out on track, he's there watching, giving you tips, giving you backup, bring your bike in, gets you a water. You get 30-minute downtime, and then you turn around, you do it for him. That's huge. It makes such a difference. I believe it was Ken Hill that said something way back in the day. I don't remember where or what forum that was said in, but it was essentially you can either be a good racer or you can be a good mechanic. You will never be both. And it was essentially like when you're building a track bike or a race bike, a lot of us that are mechanically inclined, which I think tends to be quite a few, we do a lot of our own stuff to the bikes. We build the bikes and whatever. We get done with a project and, you know, you've got a beautiful new painted fairings with this beautiful stickers on there. And every part is meticulous and color coded. And it's gorgeous. And you look professional. If you care about that, you will not race as well. And it's a fine line of running halfway in between of like, you got to care, but you also have to be able to drop that at the start line.
Yeah.
And just get out there and race. And so...
Yeah.
But yeah, I think having a crew chief buddy
that
you can kind of play back and forth with is huge, because you're absolutely right. Like in the club racing world, you got to do it all. And
let's see if I have a thumbnail where I show my my buddy Joe in Newcastle. Oh my God, he will take my bike and he'll just go through it. And these guys have been so just. And then I'll break on track. I'll break in Spain, and literally they will just jump on my bike. You know, like, and the one of my linkages broke for my my shifter, and they just they just pulled bits and out and made a whole new thing out of all new bits. And if it wasn't for those guys, my track day would have been over first day. You know, and I have three track days out in Spain. So what am I gonna do? Just get some sun?
Yeah, no, that's huge. Yeah, having good friends in the paddock and also like using the paddock. And I don't mean like taking advantage of people in the paddock, but realizing that most of us there are helpful and willing to help. And if you're willing to walk around and talk to people and you're friendly and generally, like, I think when I put a bike down for the first time, I broke my windshield. And I was trying to figure out, like, how do I get back out there? So I just started walking down the line, found a dude with a Gixxer. I was like, hey, man, do you happen to have an extra windshield? He's like, why? I was like, I just wrecked. Mine's been two pieces. He's like, I don't think so. And then he paused. He's like, actually, I might. Opens up his, you know, random box of goodies, and there's a windshield. And he said, I was like, can I buy it from you? He's like, well, I want it back. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I'm pitted down here, blue tent, black Gixxer. Come find me. If I don't find you, I'll get your windshield back. And he stopped by at the end of the day. He's like, hey, man, you can just take it. I'll take $20 for it. I was like,
really?
Okay. I think I ended up giving him like $40 because I felt bad about it. But yeah, like things like that happen all the time, you know, and realizing that when you're out there, you're not alone. Even if you came by yourself, you can 100% reach out to the paddock. We all have been there before. And so we are all willing to help.
Do you stay the night out on the track, or do you got to get a nearby hotel?
I used to do the hotel thing. I operate a motorhome myself. Yep. So yeah, generally I'll take the motorhome to the track. Depends on scenarios. There's been a couple scenarios where I'm headed with a buddy. It's just me and him, and we'll just take the truck to a hotel. But generally I pull the motorhome out and stay there. I like that a lot better.
So a toy hauler is in my future. Okay. Because of that, you know what I mean? If ever I'm up in Washington and it's just too cold, my dad lives in Arizona. I'd love to come down to Arizona or Texas and but I don't know what the protocols are for staying overnight. Do they allow it?
Yep. Most of them allow it. The biggest thing, and something I've got a couple different reviews on the channel. That is something I try and include in every track review that I do is the RV amenities, if they have them, what they are. Most tracks, I haven't met a single track where they don't allow it.
Okay.
But the question is, are you going to have power? Are you going to have water? Or do you need to bring all this stuff with you? So several tracks. I know like Carolina Motorsports Park, for instance, has like a full, they've got like 20 full hookup RV spots. Like you're good to go. You get everything you need. Other spots is like power, first come, first serve. And then some of them are like, yeah, you're welcome to bring your stuff, but it's dry. Good luck. And so you just kind of make sure you're packed for it, which is kind of part of the reason I went with a motorhome, I guess, is because I know I can last 3 days in that at least. So, but yeah, I haven't met a single track that doesn't allow staying over the night before.
No, I appreciate it. I'm going to save my licensing for another podcast because I hope I get invited to another one. Cause I'd love to pick your brain on American licenses. Cause I'm going to let mine's already lapsed and I'd like to get one out in the States. Also something else I'd like to talk to you about if I get invited on, and I'll ask you just right now, if you could have any bike for the track, what would it be?
Oof.
Right now I'm holding a gun to your head and you got to tell me what it is.
What bike for the track out of anything out there? Like something I've had before or just.
Yeah, you know, just like money's not an issue.
Yeah, man, that's a tough question. I don't know if I know the answer to that, honestly. I think something that I would like to spend more time with is RS660. I like that platform a lot.
For sure.
I got to ride one for a couple sessions. I would like to have like a built RS660 that's built for me. Has, you know, actual kind of racy ergonomics on it and is ready to go. That would probably be at the top of my list.
My buddy, I'm not gonna say his name, but he rides out in Spain. He's got a 660. He's fast. Mm-hmm. He actually races cars too. So he goes back and forth between cars and that 660.
Okay.
But actually, kind of to your point, my next bike, I'm not sure if I'm gonna get rid of the R1. I am getting rid of the CBR, but my next bike, I think, is gonna be a V2.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I mean, probably the amount of horsepower that these V4s have just are. When people told me that, you know, these liter bikes are too fast, to me, you were attacking my ego.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and then I got out there and I'm like, no, this is ridiculous. I would actually be faster, you know. And guys are hung up behind me because as soon as they get to the straights, I just blow their doors off, and then they fight their way back, and then we're back to the straight again.
Yeah.
But that doesn't help. That's not good for them. It's not good for me because I'm slowing them down and I'm not fast enough where if I had a slower bike, I'd probably be faster.
Yeah. I would not have been racing the RSV4 this year if I didn't already have it. Like if I didn't have that and I still had the money sitting around, that is not where I would have gone. I have no business racing a liter bike by any means. Like I'm not the guy, but that's the scenario I'm in. I'm also a believer in like, why not? I'm not out there to prove anything. I'm not trying to win a MotoGP championship. I'm not even trying to win a championship period. So part of me says, you know, people say all the time, start on a slower bike, otherwise you'll slow yourself down. And I agree with that. At the same time, if you have a bike and that's your reason for not going to the track, it's like, well, my bike's too fast. I know it. Just take it. Just go for it. You'll be fine.
So, and it's funny you say the 660 because Sam, the guy I was talking about, the guy that said you make more money in the States, it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, he said that there was a Moto America Cup of the 660s.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, and he says that one was fairly lucrative, and I was like, and he says, oh yeah, I can compete in that and do pretty good. Yeah, I just, and I wonder, well, no, I guess I was gonna say that maybe the V2 could be in the same class, but no, that it's too different of a bike, you know.
Yeah, so Moto America does have the Twins Cup. There are a couple other bikes in there also. But the 660 fits in that Twins Cup.
Does
so,
it?
Yep. Yeah. And then the V2 is in the Super Sport class, which will be interesting this year.
Right.
Because the R9 is now a thing. So in the past,
and not only that, but, I'm sorry.
In the past, the V2, the Gixxer 750, both got tuned down to run with the R6. So they were forced to be tuned down so the R6 could race with them. Now the R6 is kind of gone. We have this R9, which is a lot closer to the horsepower number. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. Kind of looking forward to that.
And not only that, the new V2 is... Do you know the specs on the new V2?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
So the engine's completely different, and it makes 30 horsepower less, but it's I think it's like 40 pounds lighter.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm sitting here, and the displacement, what was it? It was like 860 or whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, the older V2 before the 959 was, I forget what it was. It was the 850 something. And they got that thing up to like 140 horsepower.
Yeah.
So a bike that's 40 pounds less than a V2 that's producing 140 horsepower.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'll be fun over the next couple of years. I think that super sport class all over the world, even the bikes are getting fun because the electronics are finally falling down to the everyday bikes.
Yeah,
that's how I would put it. Which means that people are going to want to race those more and more. So yeah, sure. It'll be good. It'll be good times.
Yeah. Well, brother, I had a great time.
Yeah. No, thank you. I appreciate you coming on. I think we probably have room in the future to get you back on. We can continue to chat and have a little bit more pointed discussion next time, maybe,
for sure,
certain topics. But yeah, hey, it's awesome to have you on here and to kind of pick your brain about the European world a little bit. So it's super cool. To the listeners, thank you guys for listening as always. If you haven't already clicked the subscribe button, go ahead and throw a click on it, and then leave Steve some good comments down below. And if you have any questions for him, leave those down there also. And we can make sure we address those in our next episode. But that is, that's all we have for this week. So we will see you guys in the next episode. Thank you again, Steve.
Thank you.
On the ground at 100 miles an hour.